and Candace Clement have been your hosts.
Music by Refused, The Mountain Goats, and New Say.
Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
At the end of the first week in August 1945, the United States dropped an atomic bomb on the civilian population of Hiroshima, Japan, marking the dawn of the nuclear age. Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and this is From the Vault, the Archives weekly program that brings our history out of the vault and onto the radio. From the Vault Remixed does not normally do programs revolving around a specific date, but this week, the first week of August, we decided to play one of the more remarkable programs within the vault here at the Pacifica Radio Archives, John Hersey's Hiroshima, written in 1946 and adapted for radio by John Valentine in 2003. Here is my original introduction to the program. Originally published in The New Yorker on August 31, 1946, Hiroshima documented the destruction of Japan through the eyewitness accounts of six survivors, and stands today as a journalistic masterpiece. And now, it is my pleasure to present Tyne Daly, Ruby Dee, and Roscoe Lee Brown in Hiroshima.
Hiroshima by John Hersey. Chapter 1. A Noiseless Flash. At exactly 15 minutes past 8 in the morning, on August 6, 1945, Japanese time, at the moment when the atomic bomb flashed over Hiroshima,
Miss Toshiko Sasaki, a clerk in the personnel department of the East Asia Tin Works, had just sat down at her place in the plant office and was turning her head to speak to the girl at the next desk.
At that same moment, Dr. Masakazu Fuji was settling down cross-legged to read the Osaka Asabi on the porch of his private hospital, overhanging one of the seven deltaic rivers which divide Hiroshima.
Mrs. Hatsuyo Nakamura, a tailor's widow, stood by the window of her kitchen, watching a neighbor tearing down his house, because it lay in the path of an air raid defense fire lane.
Father Wilhelm Kleinsorge, a German priest of the Society of Jesus, reclined in his underwear on a cot on the top floor of his order's three-story mission house, reading a Jesuit magazine, Stimmen der Zeit.
Dr. Terufumi Sasaki, a young member of the surgical staff of the city's large, modern Red Cross hospital, walked along one of the hospital corridors with a blood specimen.
And coming up next on Free Radio, not an hour-long show that you were hearing the beginnings of, but in fact a two-hour-long show, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Stay tuned.
On a monkey made of gold to look for Nettles mermaid, cause I've just sought and told a ticket back to Sirius. I know it will be mine, cause 6 times 3 is 8 and 1 plus 8 is 9. I've been a windblown sigh searching from the east to the west. Ooh, I've been a queen. I've been everywhere and nowhere and the places in between. I've got everything that money can and cannot buy. But when I look behind me, I see it's all a lie. I've been a windblown sigh, searching from the east to the west. Ooh, I've been a lover too, always looking for the things I know by now. Baby, now it's
just to watch my life's reflection in a glass as clear as rain.
And that was Voice of the Homeless, Windblown Child. Good evening. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Civil rights discussions around issues in Santa Cruz, particularly regarding homeless people, and also other issues, broader issues of war and poverty, but as they bear on local activism, what we can do about them in terms of holding our own organizations, our own public officials accountable. Call-in number, in case you want to join any of the discussion you hear on the air, is 427-3772, area code 831. Again, 427-FRSC, because we are indeed Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. And we have an alternate line, in case that line is busy and you really are enthusiastic, 469-3119. You can also reach Free Radio off-air by going on the website, freakradio.org, F-R-E-A-K-R-A-D-I-O, freakradio, one word, small letters, .org. Or you can call the studio voicemail line, leave a question, public service announcement, maybe you want to give us a donation, maybe you have a comment of some kind you don't particularly feel like giving on air, maybe you're just looking for more information. Again, that number is 427, actually for the first time, 427-4523. That's the voicemail for Free Radio, 427-4523. And in case you didn't have a pencil ready and you didn't catch all these numbers, maybe you're driving in your car or riding on your bike or wandering around town listening to this on some sort of earphone apparatus, one number that perhaps serves all these purposes, if you call the Huff line, Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, that's my phone and also the phone for the homeless civil rights group I work for. If you get to me and you have a phone for me to call you back on, I will do that. And I'll give you any information I can about any of the last few numbers that you may have missed or anything else that comes up on the show. And the Huff line number is 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, Huff, Huff, Huff. So give a call and I'll get back to you. So welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's a two-hour show, and I'm expecting a call-in from Venice, and last week I was also expecting a call-in. That's not Venice, Italy, but Venice Beach, California, where there is a similar procedure, sickness, tendency going on down there, as is happening here, to gentrify the area, drive out the poor, in this case also drive out the artists and the street performers, through regulating and, in fact, eliminating parking for recreational vehicles at night, which many people use as housing, as they do here. And as we have seen here in Santa Cruz, where people have been increasingly criminalized for innocent behavior that, it's not that the behavior bothers people, it's just the notion there might be poor people getting away with sleeping, when, of course, everybody has to sleep at night, but it's illegal in Santa Cruz under the Coonerty-Riley sleeping ban. Now, that's a Our city council is responsible for that law. It's a law that criminalizes homeless people at night for sleeping after 11 o'clock. It's a $97 fine if paid outright. There are procedures to use if you get a ticket until about November 15th. After the 15th, these procedures will become harder to use to get the ticket dismissed. And I'll be talking about that more as we go into the colder, wetter winter season. So anyway, Peggy Lee Kennedy hopefully will be calling in tonight at 6:30 in about 20 minutes. We're also going to be, I kind of hope we get a call from Paula of SHOCK, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, because there's a tent city in effect in Sacramento that's been in the headlines of the Sacramento Bee for last few days. I'm going to read a bit about that, but I think Paula is a poor person struggling. She herself often homeless. I think she's got a home now, but she's working with homeless people herself, and she can't use a long-distance carrier. Free Radio doesn't have a long-distance carrier, so we are at the moment unable to deal with that kind of a call. Hopefully, maybe next show we will, and maybe we'll hear from Sacramento at that time. What's been happening, and I really have a lot of interesting tape and some interesting stuff to read, at least interesting to me and hopefully interesting to you. Locally, of course, the light brown apple moth, Checkmate spraying, which for four consecutive nights has been delayed because of the fog. It's been preempted today, of course, by the long-range development plan protests. Viva la protesters, and right on for them. And, of course, if anybody wants to call in and talk about that, feel free to do so, particularly if you are a witness up there or have some breaking news about what's going on up at UCSC regarding the attempt to save the forests up there and stop the university's expansion plans. That's being covered at length on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. What I'm going to focus on, however, for the moment, is I'm going to play for you a tape I made last Sunday of an interview I had, kind of a reluctant interview on his part, with Councilmember Tony Madrigal. And you can see some commentary on this and some emails I exchanged with the council member. If you go on to that same website, Santa Cruz Indie Media, it's under the heading Waiting for Tony Madrigal. And what this interview kind of speaks for itself, but what Tony was doing was he set up a table downtown on the mall, which he did again, I think it was on Wednesday, yesterday, where he gave out gauze face masks for people to wear when the spraying started, and also kind of as a publicity gimmick, to point out the very relevant fact that the proposed spraying is supposedly to deal with an emergency situation that hasn't really been appropriately declared an emergency, but the emergency status was to cut past the requirements of having a real environmental impact report on what the effect of this particular checkmate, as they call the spray would be. And the that kind of research on what its impact on human beings is has not been done. It may be, harmless. Although in Monterey, when it was sprayed last month, there were over 200 complaints, according to various news accounts in the Sentinel and on IndieBay.org, of different kinds of ailments, coughing, choking, respiratory problems, that indicate that there may well be some problem with this spray. And, of course, sometimes you get long-range problems that don't show up immediately. Anyway, the spraying, for simply kind of coincidental environmental reasons, has been, not environmental reasons, but functional reasons. The planes haven't been able to spray it because it's too much fog, and that cuts back on the ability to do that. I'm not entirely sure what the exact specifics are on that, but it may happen tonight. Anyway, Madrigal presented this, has supported a proposal to hold off on this. He supported, as has the City Council and the Board of Supervisors, to their credit, lawsuits to require there be environmental impact reports first, so there be some, holding off on the spray. And this has been turned down by local courts and by a federal court, although there is a hearing coming up, I think, in mid-November on that. So it may still be banned or lessened by that hearing. But one issue for us here, I say us because I met yesterday with other activists from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is the issue of its impact on homeless people. Because, after all, those people who are outside are the ones who are most likely to be sprayed the most. And the issue is, what's going to protect them? And I've suggested that those council members, such as Ed Porter and Tony Madrigal, who particularly seem concerned and active around the issue, also raise the issue of emergency shelter for homeless people, at least with respect to the nights of the spraying when that happens. And it's like pulling lead teeth out of a robot's mouth with, your bare hands to get Councilmember Madrigal to answer a straight question on this. And you're going to hear me attempt to do this on this tape. This was Sunday afternoon. I and others have been in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz urging the public to inform Vice Mayor Coonerty that his don't sleep policies for the homeless just weren't the ones the community wants. Coonerty is one of the chief workers at the bookshop Santa Cruz. His dad owns the store. His sister also owns the store. I guess they're joint owners. And Coonerty's a big worker there. He's banned a number of activists from coming in because of their positions. There are protest activities outside which have been nonviolent, which have been peaceful, which have been colorful, but which he's refused to respond to. But anyway, right up the street, Tony Madrigal is giving out these gauze masks and urging people to support the injunction against LBAM and write their, call into the council and call into the city and call into the county. Not bad suggestions, but of course not a word about the homeless. So I approached him about this issue, hence the following tape.
Interestingly enough, at Cooper and Pacific across from the Cinema 9, I've taken a sabbatical from the boycott bigotry table, and I'm up here at the table where I'm told Councilman Madrigal, yeah, that's him, is actually giving out masks around the issue of the light brown apple moth. There are about 10 people gathered around the table. Hey, how you doing there, Lois?
Huh?
So you've got your gas mask. Are you ready to be...
I'm collecting signatures for the people who are going to get gas masks.
And what's going to happen? I mean, you're going to give a gas mask to every homeless person so they can cover up, but they can also get kind of wet down with the stuff, I guess.
Everyone who just...
I guess any more of a body bag would be good for the homeless.
Yeah, it's especially miserable for the homeless. It's terrible for the homeless. God. Terrible for any creature who is outdoors and gets the stuff poured on them. We don't know how toxic it is, but we have heard that that the inert ingredients with it at least are quite toxic.
So you're listening, people. Is this just for? I mean, are you taking any action to try to stop the spraying other than, leaving town, writing angry letters to the Times, or in other words, is there any direct action plan?
Yes. Well, one brave woman has entered a lawsuit in the district court, in federal court, saying we have a right to a healthy environment, and we cannot have this imposed on us without our consent. We can't have it imposed on us, and we must be able to give our consent to such a thing. And there hasn't been an opportunity for that, and we've given the opposite of our consent. We've protested and protested, and people have spoken up, and still they insist on doing this.
Now, I know there have been two other meetings today, one with Councilmember Porter and then another at the Wired Wash Cafe. Have you been to those?
No, but the Wired Wash Cafe was of the woman who initiated the lawsuit at federal court. Mm-hmm. And so...
So again, it's all a matter of wading through legal channels. No one is actually planning any direct action.
This is a direct action. Giving out face masks makes a symbolic point. And then Madrigal has said he thinks that media is the answer. I myself think it's very important. I'm a media person. And I think that, symbolic statements of this type, and who knows, they may actually be protective, but I think it's mostly symbolic.
Right. But direct action also can mean, occupying buildings, lying down on runways, taking over freeways, all the old traditional stuff.
That's right.
But people are not yet...
Throwing spitballs at the airplane.
disassembling nuclear weapons, as Katya Komisarek once attempted to do 20 years ago.
We'll take it one step at a time, and we'll do what we have to do to stop this nonsense. It's amazing in a week how much people have come to understand what's going on. A week ago, everyone was going, huh? And now look at this. So.
Well, tonight you get to breathe in that, I guess if the spraying starts tonight, in about 4 hours, right?
Well, it probably will start in Prunedale Aromas. not in our beloved city here, but in another day or so it'll come into the city. And I just found out today by calling the hotline that my house is in a buffer zone because I'm two blocks from the bay, and they don't want to. But I will have airplanes turning around over my house because when they hit the bay, they'll go back.
Have you got your 22 pistol with you?
Now, wait a minute.
For heaven's sake.
I'm not yet ready to go to jail.
I see. Well, now, that, of course, is the real question. Not necessarily.
I'm not as brave as you.
I don't know about that. I haven't even got my gas mask yet.
By all means, you want to sign up and get one?
What does that involve? Does my name go to the government?
No. Just an email. It goes to us, and so we can notify you, and we can...
Make me a part of your masterful conspiracy.
That's right.
So we're here at the table with Councilmember Madrigal, who's being videoed as a ear loop mask, Kimberly Clark, interesting, surgical masks, tie-on surgical masks. And Tony's explaining it to volunteers who are signing up.
So we're not getting sprayed tonight, right?
Okay.
Well, and they're working their way from the south.
He's explaining the spraying schedule.
Light brown apple. Got really spray. Won't be sprayed tomorrow either because
that's
I lost
like a mask.
It.
I mean, it's good to have a surgical mask.
Yes.
So, Tony, are you going to be distributing these masks to homeless people out at the homeless service center?
We're going to be distributing them here because this is a central location that we're able to round up people to come. Anybody's welcome to come and get a free face mask. So we urge everybody to come and get a free face mask.
As a council member, are you providing any protection for homeless people who have no place to go indoors? And as you know, there's shelter tonight for 40 people, 1,500 to 2,000 of whom are outside and vulnerable. You're a council member, Tony. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on this. Have you proposed anything?
Are you going to start giving me a hard time, like, right away?
I'm asking a real question, Tony. If it's a hard time, then you're going to have to deal with it. You're a council member.
Of course I will. No, but, I mean, what we're trying to do right now is focus on giving away these free face masks to the community folks who need them. And so, please, tell all the folks that you know that homeless or not to come on down and get some free face masks.
You also have maybe some body bags to cover up people who are homeless at night, who have no protection, or any public buildings going to be opened up on this issue, or are you pushing for that at all?
We didn't get any donations of body bags.
What about a public building or two that people could go into during this spring?
Well, that's something that we should...
Yeah, you're shrugging, but I mean, you're a council member. You could take action on that. Would you like to initiate it?
How can you suggest an idea that could work?
Well, I think he just gave the answer, that's why. Anyways.
Well, no, he has the power. I have the idea. That's the point.
Where would you send people?
Well, various empty buildings. The Civic Auditorium would be after hours. City Council chambers after hours. Warehouses after hours. Parking garages are even better than places. Places that Tony voted to keep people out of. It's illegal, thanks to Tony's vote, for a homeless person to walk into a parking garage. Well, maybe he could suspend that rule during the spring.
I think that would be a good idea.
So what do you think, Tony? A move to suspend the parking garage law during the spring so homeless people can get in there if they want some shelter, if they have nowhere else to go?
A serious question.
Yeah.
Not to harass you.
I don't know. I have to think about it.
I have a motorhome. May I go up the coast a few miles outside the spraying zone and camp? I don't have enough money to sleep in a RV park. And I'm very concerned about this.
This is a man named Roland Marlin, who is a... Do I have his name right? His last name? His first name is Roland. And he actually then did a series of follow-up interviews with Tony. My apologies, Roland, for screwing up your last name, if I'm doing that. And he's... asking him questions, as am I, about the issue, of course, what do you do with the homeless? And Tony hasn't thought about that too much, apparently. Here's more of that discussion.
Direct answer, yes or no?
About?
Can I go up the coast, out of the spraying zone, and park my camp illegally?
Illegally?
Legally. Oh, legally. Will I be harassed by the police?
I don't know. I don't know if you're going to actually be harassed.
Where am I going to go, Tony? I mean, do I have to go to San Jose and they're going to harass me there? I've been living here for over 25 years.
I'd like to ask a question, too. Just, I actually feel a real interest that you get the needs you're trying to serve met. And I also have a real interest that the main focus of this get met, too. So I'm wondering, One strategy I can think of for addressing both needs
would
be...
Well, here's the story.
Let me...
Tony will be here while when we're long gone. He'll be doing this kind of stuff.
Right.
This is the opportunity to ask him a question which he doesn't have an answer to, and he's not interested in answering. We wish he were. We've been approaching him for years on this subject. Here is a very particular example of it.
Gotcha. And I've been dealing with this.
And that's... Right.
So I guess my question is, how long would you like to address this on him? I'd like to know, and he'd probably like to know, how long would you like to have this conversation so that maybe the main focus of this could continue to happen?
You know that the main focus will continue to happen. My lungs only have a certain amount of staying power. I don't want to stand here all year.
But I
feel like you're running interference for Tony here when you should be asking him these questions directly yourself.
Place ourselves, too.
I've actually been an activist around the moth thing. And I haven't been so much an activist around the homeless thing. And it doesn't mean that I don't have an interest in well-being for the homeless.
Or that I don't have an interest in the moths. We were talking about that on free radio today.
It's just, I relax more when I know how long a person is asking me to pay attention to one of their interests and concerns. And it lets me pay better attention.
We're trying to get Tony's attention. When we get his attention, it's likely we're going to go. Once we get something from him, that is likely not to happen, of course. In which case, we'll see what happens.
I would have better and easier attention for your issue if I knew how much attention you were asking for.
Like, ask Tony when he's going to pay attention to us. That's the issue.
But do you understand? Like, would you be willing to ask, like...
You're not answering my question.
I'll ask it again, and I'll answer it.
The question is, are you willing to ask Tony how long before he'll give us a straight answer on these questions about access to public buildings? Will he take action? Call for an emergency city council meeting if necessary? Make a public statement on the issue? Any of those things will be positive. Will he do any of those things?
You know what? I'd be happy if he said, you know what? I'm too overwhelmed with the present issues to deal with that now. I'd like to return to that. I'd be happy if we got even that kind of answer. Because that would
be overwhelmed. You're dealing with people inside their homes who have places to go. This man is making a public statement on issues, but he won't deal with people who are outside at all. He's ignored that for three years while on the city council. And in this lethal situation, why I'm talking to you, I'm not sure, man. I got to get back to him. I'm sorry. Okay.
Can you tell me how long you want to have that conversation?
I've told you. As soon as he pays attention and starts addressing the issues, then we can talk about that question.
And what would addressing the issues look like?
I don't know. What's your name?
My name's Scott Erkes.
Scott, you're interfering with my attempt to communicate with a council member. Stop interfering.
And I'm worried that you're interfering with the action.
Well, continue to attempt to interfere, then that's fine.
Last one out there.
It's your choice.
I just think it doesn't look good on your cause or ours if we're sitting here.
It's not a matter of looking good. And you're the one who's interfering with the whole situation. You're trying to fend off this whole situation. Talk to Tony. Don't talk to me.
I'm expressing interest in the business.
Feel free to come, guys.
Hey. So, Tony, getting back to the issue again, are you willing to make a... No, no, wait a minute. I'm asking you if right now you are willing to commit yourself to making a public statement about the vulnerability of the homeless on this issue and call for a specific solution. You bet. You bet I am. You bet I am.
It's just that. Look, bottom line.
The point is to get him to make a statement about this, to raise the issue. That's the point.
The issue, you've been raising the issue for many years.
No. This is an issue right now that's going to affect homeless people tonight in 4 hours.
The spring?
Yes.
Oh, no. It's going to happen.
Tomorrow night. It'll be affecting people more than any of the other people you're talking to. It'll be affecting homeless people. Are you willing to make some actual substantive action on this by, for example, calling for a public building to be open, by, for example, opening up a parking garage for people? I appreciate the fact that you're giving out these masks, but I'm looking for something substantive from you.
Well, this is, I got to tell you, Robert, every time you come in such an attacking mode, it seems very...
I'm asking a substantive question. Give me an answer, that's all. What's your name?
I'm answering your question.
Susan. Sorry, Susan, I've forgotten your name. Yeah, well, I'm just trying to get an answer, that's all.
So you're gonna let me finish answering the question?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so like I was saying, every time that you come out here and you ask me in such an attacking kind of a mode, it's very discouraging to want to work with you, Robert.
Don't work with me, just answer the question, that's all.
And it's very discouraging to want to talk to you, Robert.
You're not answering the question, Tony. The question is, will you make a public statement about this issue? Yes or no?
Well, I've already shared with you in the past that I've already shared.
I'm gonna make a public statement, and that's what you're saying.
Robert, you're not even letting me finish answering the question.
Go ahead, answer.
Stop it. Okay.
Oh, God, you caught that.
Go ahead.
So having said that, I shared with you in the past that I know what it's like to be homeless because I was homeless myself. And I think the homeless situation is wrong, and I definitely would like to be part of that solution.
Okay. Now, here's an opportunity for you to do that. Are you willing to make a public statement on the issue?
I already shared with you that I would like to be able to be part of the solution.
Right. So.
And I think that we should try to do something about that, definitely. You know, if there's something more that we can do besides all the services for homeless people that are already being provided in the community, if there's something more that we can try to do.
Tony, there's space tonight for 40 people indoors. And there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. Now, normally that's a problem in and of itself. The question, what you're working on here, and I commend you for your work on this issue, is a potentially toxic substance, or a substance that has unknown effects on human beings. This is particularly going to affect homeless people. Will you call for special measures to be taken to defend homeless people on this issue publicly? There's a Sentinel reporter right here. Will you do that?
Well, you know what? What do you want me to say?
Yes.
Oh, you want me to say? You want me to say?
You want me to say yes?
No. Right now, I'm focusing on this.
This is the same issue.
Slightly different issue.
Talking about protection of the most vulnerable people. You're concerned about that. That's why you got the gas mask out. You want to change the policy. I commend you on that.
Yeah, I hope that we can keep this spraying from happening still. I mean, it's still not too late, and I hope we can do this because it's going to affect everybody, right, including the homeless folks that you're talking about. Including the homeless folks that you're talking about.
Can I reframe this question? Would you be uncomfortable going on whatever his record is here, saying, yeah, I'll start pulling to get the homeless some extra shelter space? I'm okay if that's your stance. He's just looking for your stance.
He's asking to open up public buildings.
Yes.
You know, and
or private buildings. Or parking garage.
Or parking garages, you know, and yeah. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable opening up the private garages for that purpose. I mean the public garages for that purpose.
Okay, well,
that's not what they're for. They're for parking. I don't feel comfortable opening up the whole civic.
Nobody's parking there at night.
I mean,
I answered you because I
feel like you're putting him into a bit of a tough spot. In the brochure that was sent out by the CDFA, they said that they would work together with city officials and the homeless shelters to set up something to protect the homeless, and I feel that hasn't happened. Has
correct.
The CDFA worked together with you?
Yeah, I haven't heard about any of that
that
happening.
That is the issue here, that there has been nothing put in place to help the homeless.
I would really like to see, in addition, I mean, another thing that I would like to see is I would like to see some help from state officials and even from our federal officials to try to get some funding,
right,
to try to bring about some resources to help the people, medical needs, you know, including protecting homeless folks. Because what I hear is that this issue about the light brown apple moth is something that could infest, you know, the entire country. So we're trying to contain it here locally. Since we're taking basically, quote unquote, the hit for the entire country, I feel that if we can get some federal funding to help us deal with this whole issue, I think that would be a right step in the right direction.
Don't you feel that this is a
precedent? Well, this has never happened before that I know about. I mean, this never happened when they actually sprayed on Santa Cruz, unless y'all have more history than I do.
You're not about to get federal funding in the next week that I know of. It's the city council that can take action in the next week by an emergency session. You can't call one, but you could call for one.
I'm asking you, will you call for this
or at least make a public statement about it?
Yes. I've already given you a public statement, Robert.
Which is you're not comfortable with the parking garages.
Yes.
But you, what is it you would be comfortable with that would protect homeless people in this area in the next week?
I'm pretty sure you're probably having this information about the contact.
There's so many different options. I wouldn't know where to begin.
Just name one.
Well, no. I mean, that's just the thing. There's so many. There's so many different options. I wouldn't know where to begin.
I would encourage you to call for one of those options to open up. I mean, if you're not comfortable with the parking garages, which the reason I propose them is that they're there. They're already built. Nobody else is using them at night. People have used them in the past. Presumably, you could ask the city manager to look for abandoned buildings that are not being used. I really want to talk to you about it publicly, though, Tony. He's calling me off to the.
And at this point, Tony was calling off, motioning me to go off to the side and talk to him away from the table where he was giving out the masks.
Side. What's up, Tony? Tell me.
Yeah, I'm going to bring you out here, man, because you're hogging up the whole table space.
Tony, I came down because I saw your email. I'm not really involved with...
And this is Roland speaking, the fellow who also, he lives in his vehicle, apparently. He's concerned about some sanctuary from the spraying for himself and other folks who live in their vehicles.
Homeless issue. But it came down to I didn't vote for you, but I came down to thank you for supporting this cause. I really did. Hearing this...
What's your name?
My name is Roland.
Oh, you're Roland.
You know me?
I remember the email you sent me.
So I'm willing to support you. I don't care, you know, a lot of the city council members I voted for didn't come down here. They weren't interested. Cynthia Matthews, Coonerty, you know, after a little pressure. Yeah, after a little pressure, yes, but you were the one that actually I felt I could support. I did, honest. I'm not bullshitting you. And so this is a question. I mean, the homeless people are just as important as me, Robert, or anybody else here. They do need some attention, and nobody's going to give it to them. A simple request of asking for some place they can go for the few nights they're spraying is not out of the ordinary. It's not.
You know what? The simple request does not sound unreasonable. However, the way that
you may not
the rapid action and the rapid responses that Robert's demanding. Well, you know, I understand he's in his rights to demand them. That's not the problem. The problem is we have to deal with the political reality of whether it's even feasible to get it done at our city council. Do we have, I mean, you know, you've heard the saying, right? Can you count to four? Can you count to four
votes? No, you can't change anything. You could go on the record and say, yeah, I support this. In some degree.
I understand.
That's all you have to say. It may not get done, but he's asking for some sort of a yes.
You know, and that's one I'm trying to think of some of the different specific actions that were requested. Hold on just a second. I don't know if you want to pause it. Anyway.
Gracias. Give us this opportunity, yeah?
Thank you. We'll see you, little guy. Yeah. Thank you for coming, man. Thank you for coming.
And Tony, as I told you before, and I'm serious, I'm glad you're out here on the streets making yourself vulnerable. Yes, you are being attacked in a certain sense because you've been silent all these years. But the fact of the matter is you're willing to be out here and to deal with it. And you get points for that. But, you know,
because of that, you come after me over and over again.
Well, no, because you don't do anything about it, because you won't give me a straight answer.
I've asked you over and over. You know, you're going to... I remember asking you a long time ago, you know, are you going to keep on attacking me?
It's an issue that you're not dealing with. Hence, people are going to continue to bring it up.
It's not an easy issue. It has no easy solution. Well, but it requires money and resources, and those are limited right now.
It requires at least a principal position, which we thought that you were moving toward, but then you became silent on.
It also requires money and resources.
We're talking about it, but there's a broader issue we're not really talking about. Let's talk about the specific issue coming up, this whole thing. Are you willing to call for some places to be opened up that you said and say that
God, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm just remembering right now. Speaking of calling for, I did actually already email the mayor and the council, and I already did request a special meeting. Actually, not just with the city council. I also requested a special meeting with county officials, having be a joint meeting on how, so that we can get together and discuss what next steps we can take. I already did that.
That's good.
I already did request that special meeting to happen. I can't call for the meeting because I'm not the mayor.
Okay, but about this, you can call for it.
No,
well... Well, you answered part of it.
Yeah,
you called for a meeting, but the question is,
well, no,
but,
see,
but
like
the purpose. Wait a minute.
No, you wait. No.
Why?
Wait. You asked me. Am I going to call? I just answered your question, Robert.
A special meeting to deal with the issue of shelter for homeless people under these conditions.
Not just a special meeting for the hell of it.
You know.
No, it's not.
Or the general issue.
How dare you say that, Robert? It's a special meeting to talk
because
about.
I'm not getting straight answers.
I'm giving you a straight answer, Robert. The straight answer is, of course, I already did call for a special meeting on how to deal with next steps with this whole spring. I'm sure we're going to talk about everything.
You're going to talk about everything, but are you going to support sheltering homeless people during this?
We don't know what's going to come out of that meeting.
I'm asking before you walk into that meeting.
We don't even know what's going to come out of that meeting, Robert. We don't know. But you know what? I'm glad that I got a chance to have you ask me the question because guess what? That's one of the things that...
You haven't answered the question, John. You may imagine you have, but you have not. The question is, will you walk into any meeting and state, or before the meeting, and state, I support shelter for homeless people during this period of time, whether public or private, and I will work to get it done with interested people. Please come to me, give me a call, let's work on this issue together. And you might say, I haven't got the time for it. You might say, it's too big an issue for me. But you might say, at least say, I support that, and I'd like people who want to volunteer to help with that, step forward and talk to me. Will you say that?
Oh,
more or less.
Well, that doesn't sound unreasonable at all, Robert.
I don't think it is unreasonable. The question is, will you say it?
I think I just answered you right now. I don't think that sounds unreasonable at all.
Okay,
You know what? Let me just say
this. He hasn't said it. What I've said is not unreasonable, but will he say it?
He's agreeing with you. He's saying it's not unreasonable.
I don't think it sounds unreasonable at all. And you know, the problem is, you know, how are we going to be able to get all of this done within the short amount of time that we have, given the fact that this spring is imminent. It's upon us almost.
And the poor people are the most vulnerable.
Poor people are always the most vulnerable. That's why
the
I asked.
Spanish population is probably next vulnerable.
You know what? I just think there's a lot of poor communities. I remember when the Secretary of Agriculture came to Santa Cruz a couple of weeks ago. That was one of the first questions I asked him is, you know, what process do you have set up in place to help, you know, poor people that don't have access to health care be able to get help if they get affected by this spraying that's going to be happening? And their answer was, you know, go see a doctor.
Well, they pay for the doctor.
And then, you know, and then I said, well, there's a lot of people that don't have access to health care
exactly.
and health insurance, and so a lot of people don't go to the doctor as it is.
I know.
You know,
but
much less for something.
But because they can't afford it.
Is it possible to have a moratorium on the sleeping ban for, like, up until the beginning of spring to at least ease the burden of the homeless people temporarily, and in the process, during that time, the meeting that you, I guess, emailed the mayor could maybe come to some kind of decision about it. But in the meantime, during the interim, the ban could be suspended.
You know, the question, though, is, I mean, I don't want to get into the details of it, but so pretend that the sleeping ban does get lifted temporarily. The ban is for folks sleeping either in their car or in parks, right? On any public property.
Or in your vehicle.
Which is an open space, right? So if the spraying happens, they're going to get affected whether they're sleeping outdoors.
In any structure that is not a residence or a hotel is where the ban actually impacts.
Right. So the spraying is going to be happening outdoors, and if you're asking for the sleeping happening outdoors in the parks because that's where the ban will be lifted, how is it going to work?
He is asking a separate question. He's asking a broader question. I was asking a more an immediate question, which was, you know, it's actually true. The sleeping ban applies in these theaters. You couldn't put people in this theater and sleep at night. It would be illegal to do that under the current sleeping ordinance. So, but there are two questions. One question is his question. Will you support suspending the sleeping ban over the winter as a...
At least until a solution can be had that will deal with the problem instead of just this law that says you can't sleep anywhere.
You know what? I'm not too sure that lifting the sleeping ban is the solution.
I'm not saying it's a solution. I'm just saying temporarily lift it until you guys can meet and maybe figure out a solution.
I'm not even sure that lifting the sleeping ban temporarily is a solution.
I'm not saying it's a solution. I'm just saying it's an easing of the burden of the homeless people until you guys can meet and discuss this thing and address it. Where maybe a solution can be had.
There needs to be a different measure because I'm just not sure that lifting of the sleeping ban without having something else in place so that folks can go somewhere else. He's asking me that, and I'm actually taking the time to have that conversation.
I appreciate that.
But do you agree there has to be some kind of solution to this problem?
The only council member that's
Tony,
ever answered by email.
Do you believe?
I remember.
Do you agree that there has to be some kind of solution to this whole issue?
I was telling Robert earlier, look, I think the whole homeless situation that we have in our community is wrong. I wish that we could, you know, do something to, you know, to solve it. I would like to work, do what I can to help alleviate the situation. So that's my statement.
One question he had was,
Robert, I really got to get back to the table.
Okay, so I may understand you before you go, so we don't have any misunderstanding. Are you saying that you will publicly call for there to be some kind of protective shelter space for homeless people during the course of this current spring?
That's not what I said. What I said was that I already called behavior. Look, you know what? This is a problem. This is why nobody wants to talk to you. But I'm just telling you straight out. I called for a meeting with I emailed the mayor and the council asking if we can have a special emergency meeting to deal with the situation, next steps with the county and the city to try to deal with the situation. Now that I've had a chance to talk to you about it, I'm glad I did because you raised the issue of also the impact on the homeless people. Right. And so my intention is to bring that issue up too in that meeting, hopefully.
I appreciate that.
So that's my answer to you.
You'll bring up the issue in that meeting. Are you taking a position yourself that is an important issue that you think is important even prior to the meeting you want to press on with in some way?
Well, That's always been an important issue to me, Robert. I've never denied that.
Well, you've never talked about it much that I've heard.
But just because I haven't talked about it much doesn't mean I'm denying
it. I'm not sure how we can believe it's an important issue if you don't ever talk about it and don't ever do anything about it.
I've been working on a whole lot of issues. I've been working on issues of economic development in our community so that we can have the resources as a city to try to deal with issues such as, providing.
If we have more anti-homeless laws, we'll have better situation for taxes, too. I don't follow that one either. And I'm not familiar with what your particular... No, I mean, some say that if you run the homeless out of town, you get a better tax base, and those that remain will be in better shape.
We held an economic summit about a year and a half ago trying to bring the community together to talk about what type of economic prosperity we want to have as a city. Have the community come together and define what type of economic prosperity we want to have. It's easier said than done, but we've had community projects. We had projects in the community that have been, stopped by the community.
Let me finish.
Such as the Coast Hotel project, which was supported by so many folks, but there was people in the community who still came together to have a referendum to stop it. And so that's an example of.
I was one of those.
Had we had more of a community dialogue prior to that to say this is what we want to have as an economic engine in our community here or here or here. Had we had some more of those discussions, maybe it could have led to changing more hearts and minds in Santa Cruz to try to find out what kind of economic prosperity we want to say yes to and what we don't. Because so far, I got to tell you, I as a young person, a younger person, younger generation, I grew up as a farm worker. I want to choose to stay in Santa Cruz. I want to be able to afford to live here. I want to be able to eventually buy a home here before I get to be Robert's age.
Can I ask one last question? So is this meeting that you requested, is this specifically about the homeless problem
No, no, the meeting that I requested is an emergency meeting to deal with next steps about the light brown apple moss spraying.
About the what?
Light brown apple moss spraying that's going to be happening in our community.
Oh.
So that's the meeting that I requested. And what I said to Robert is, I'm glad that I'm able to. I was able to have this conversation with him because now I'm going to try to remember to bring up that issue.
There are homeless people in Santa Cruz.
Well, I mean, it's just good that he was able to bring that information, bring that issue up to me, because now I'm able to do that. So, Robert, I got to get back to the table.
Thanks.
Okay?
Is there anything we can do to help you in that situation, what you're doing now at the table?
Yeah, sure.
Well, say it on. What, you don't want to say it on air?
Sure.
So it's a meal afterward where the Hofsters are reviewed.
And, that's kind of the tape from Sunday afternoon in front of O'Neill's, where Councilmember Tony Madrigal ducked away from the table and the question of confronting, would he make a public statement supporting the right of homeless people to shelter and the importance of opening up a public building? And he never said he would. He continued to duck away from that. He continued to evade it. He said he was interested in the homeless issue, and a number of homeless activists were actually asking broader questions about the sleeping ban, which he also said he didn't favor suspending, or he wasn't sure that was a good idea, which really isn't the issue around the spraying protection for the homeless. If you want to call in and comment on this issue, you can, 831-427-3772, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides is the name of the show, and I'm Robert Norris. Again, 427-3772 is the call-in number for those who want to call in and comment on this dialogue I had with Councilmember Madrigal on Sunday. And in essence, my final belief, my sense was that not only did he say very little, in a certain sense, people... I did give him points for coming out on the streets with, to try to do some direct action to mobilize the community around this issue, though I think he's trying to jump in front of a parade that's already marching, but still, okay. But when asked about the people most vulnerable, the homeless, his response is you don't want to be attacked, oh gosh, I'm calling for an emergency meeting and those issues will come up. I'm not asking that, of course, I'm asking, will you take a position before the meeting? And he can't seem to make a straight statement on that. And in subsequent emails, which I had with him, and I posted them on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, he continued to be evasive and continued to decline to comment. And he did, however, in his most recent email, which I got today, he seems to be saying something more than he said before. And I'm going to read that email now. Get my mic in front of me there. I think that works. Tony's response, I emailed him, I said, Tony, again, my question is a simple one. What specific shelter are you proposing be made available to homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz during the spring to protect them from possible adverse consequences? This question needs to be answered whether there is an emergency meeting or not. If you choose not to speak out clearly on this issue, dealing with the most vulnerable people, homeless people who have no choice but to live outside in the city, then what does that say about the depth of your concern here and of the sincerity of your leadership generally? Please be specific and responsive and address the question above. Thanks. And his response was, Dear Robert, this is the longest email he's ever sent me, actually. This email is being written in response to your email dated November 7th. Once again, here you go again. Instead of trying to get an answer from me, which you have a right as a member of the community, you attack me for what you either don't hear or don't like. It is becoming a constant pattern in your interactions with me and probably other elected officials. I expect, as always, you will publish and slant my comments based on your position. However, let me try to be clear. I do think that something needs to be done to provide for our entire community's health against the spraying, and I currently do not have any specific shelter proposal for homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz in relation to the LBAM spraying. What I have been trying to push is for both the city and county to meet jointly to discuss options, next steps, and our response to the spraying in our community. Clearly, this is a broad discussion that could include many things, including protection of our community as a whole, continue legal avenues, assistance and or advice for those who work in the field, responses to illnesses, assistance to those who need it, etc., etc., etc. I don't agree with your contention that it is the city's sole responsibility to provide for our community's health due to the spraying, especially since the state is doing the spraying. I actually never said that, but this is why I pushed the state when they came to the council that they need to provide a process for health resources for our community, which is why I've been pushing for an emergency meeting jointly with the county. I disagree with your statement that those who are homeless are our most vulnerable for the spraying. We know very little about the effects, both short-term or long-term, that the spraying will have. Thus, I believe our entire community is vulnerable. Sincerely, Tony Madrigal. And that was Tony's response. And I responded with another letter to him, which was... You can actually find it posted on indiebay.org. I'm about to post it. There's a whole bunch of sort of the series of letters which was posted gives you the chronology. And I think it shows that if you are persistent and keep asking the question again and again, particularly in public places before supporters who begin to wonder what's wrong with the council member that he or she doesn't answer the question, then you will eventually get some kind of an answer. Of course, you know, whether it's worth the energy or whether the answer is going to be worth anything is something that, you know, you have to judge on the ground as you go. Actually, what I wrote to him was in my final letter, and I'm waiting for a response. Tony, thanks for your reply of 8th of November. If you don't understand why homeless people who have no choice but to be sprayed with Checkmate at night are not the most vulnerable population, I don't know that I can explain it to you. If you don't understand why it is the city's responsibility to provide shelter for those most vulnerable people during spraying times, not merely to discuss options at a joint meeting, then again, I don't know that I can make it any clearer. You voted to make it illegal for anyone without a vehicle to seek shelter in a parking garage, even in such an emergency as this. Having denied the homeless this obvious, though inadequate, shelter, it is your moral and political responsibility to propose and press for alternatives. The state authorities will not do this. I doubt the county is terribly interested. Your position of power is with the city on the city council. Perhaps on the night of the first spraying, or any night when they spray, you can arrange to give out some of the gauze masks you've been distributing to folks and invite them into the empty Sentinel building or one of the many other buildings that lie vacant in Santa Cruz and could be used as emergency shelter or a parking structure as a last resort. While I understand you are only one vote, your voice is an important one. When you suggest the need for community dialogue on, say, the issue of possible police profiling, where you were savagely and unfairly attacked by the Sentinel, the SCPD, and the rest of the city council, you are, as on the LBAM spraying issue, only one voice. But that is an important voice, and it is important that the issue be raised. Of course, you could actually go beyond posturing to announce and organize such a meeting yourself as an individual if you are as serious about the issue as you claim to be. You mistake my attempt to get a clear response from you as an attack. It is my responsibility as an activist concerned with rights and services for the homeless community to require answers from public officials who have the power to take action. I have published your comments without censorship or omission. I have not sought to draw you aside, have private conversations with you, or persuade you to say less than you feel because I may find it personally uncomfortable. The issues we are talking about are bigger than both of us. Thank you for your latest reply. At least the word homeless finally appears there. Now you need to show the leadership that much of the community has shown it's ready to follow. The choice is yours. Sincerely, Robert Norse. So that is my response to Tony. What's your response to all this? Anybody have any thoughts? Whether you think the issue of the light brown apple moth and the spraying is a big one or not, and I have my doubts that maybe it's just a big tempest in a teapot. I know, however, that it certainly is untested, this stuff, in terms of any kind of long-range tests, and it's the state is circumventing the environmental impact stuff, which I find really questionable, by simply unilaterally declaring an emergency without really, as far as I understand it, there are really some real questions about how much of an emergency it is in terms of the difficulty that they're claiming they have to spray this stuff to stop the evil light brown apple moth from devouring the crops. But there's a lot of contention that that's not really a significant emergency situation that requires spraying untested stuff all over the place. Whatever you believe on that issue, the issue of homeless vulnerability, if you're going to assume that it is a problem, is obviously a real one and, you know, has to be addressed. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Objection, Your Honor. Are they badgering the witness?
Oh, yes, yes. Mission, what's your name, caller?
Scott.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
All right. Well, I think that you were a little badgering Tony a little bit. You weren't letting him finish the sentence. I mean, that's your normal...
Hey, shut up. Shut up. I don't want to hear it. Forget it, man.
I'd like to hear you explain yourself, Robert. Why do you badger people like that? Why don't, you know, talk to them and let them finish sentences, you know? I mean, you could wait till they finish the sentence, then attack them. You don't have to, like, attack them mid-sentence.
Well, what if the sentence is very, 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 very long?
Well, then you have to write down your response because you might forget it with your short-term memory loss.
I guess. Yeah, it's the marijuana use, what can I say, or the occasional marijuana use. Well, what was your reaction to, I mean, you felt that was badgering poor Tony. What did you think of his responses? Do you think he moved in his position at all, or is he still, a lot of hot air was there, and a lot of ducking and dodging. I didn't hear him take any positions that were really
substantive. He did say that he would mention it, which is something, you know, I mean, I guess it would be somewhat of a victory for you because he did, you know, I mean, however small that is. I mean, at least you got him to say that if there is going to be a meeting, which, as far as I know, there is no
emergency meeting.
No emergency meeting, yeah. So... nothing is going
to
happen.
I mean, I wasn't looking for him to go to the meeting and mention it. I was looking for him to mention it as a public statement, and then, you know, that in and of itself might press for solutions both inside meetings and outside meetings. I mean, some private person might come forward and say, hey, I'm going to donate this large empty space. A building isn't being used.
Yeah, we got this big circus tent we're going to put up, you know.
Yeah, right, to protect the merchants after the earthquake. Why not protect the homeless during the spring, or actually anybody else? Maybe tourists who happen to be wandering by, you know.
Yeah.
Don't have a car.
Now, to get to the spring, the point you were just making before I called about there being an emergency, well, so far, there has been no factual evidence presented to anyone that there is an emergency.
You mean in terms of the spraying being toxic or in terms of the light brown apple moth being an abuser?
As far as there being this overwhelming infestation, there hasn't been one farmer that they brought forward that said, yes, 10% of my apple crop was destroyed by this moth, or 90% of my crop was destroyed, or even 1% of my crop was destroyed. There hasn't even been a 1%er brought forward, you know. There hasn't been, like, one bush somewhere, you know, that was, like, you know, I don't know, in somebody's backyard, they got eaten by this moth. You know, they haven't brought anything forward to justify their branding this whole thing an emergency.
Yeah, and I notice also that, I mean, there's an interesting line of argument. If you go to the comments section of the Sentinel website, which is an interesting resource still, apparently they destroyed all the old past comments, but there are now...
You mean they got rid of all the Pat Kittle stuff?
I'm afraid Pat and even Robert Norse's occasional comments have fallen by the wayside.
Oh, man.
But, you know, actually that's because I think they shifted over last Friday when they moved up to Scotts Valley or something. Anyway, but there is an interesting series of claims that the reason for all this super serious concern about the light brown apple moth is because it's really a trade issue, that the this is how the light brown apple moth is regarded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture or some such group in other countries, and they've imposed all these restrictions on goods coming in order to, you know, not antagonize these foreign importers. They have to do some similar kind of draconian process here.
Well, I personally, okay, if this is true, if there is some like concern by the Japanese or by the Bolivians or somebody that might get some vegetables from California that might not want them because of the apple moth, I think that concern was perpetrated by the company that makes the spray.
Is that speculative, or do you have some specific
evidence?
No, I have
evidence? No proof of this. This is my total speculation. They're actually breeding those moths up in Oregon so that they can, like, squish them and take the pheromones out of them, and then, like, okay, now we have to recreate these pheromones artificially. So they're the ones breeding these damn moths, okay? How do we know? They didn't bring a box of them down here and let them go in Live Oak and say, there's an infestation in Live Oak, California. We have to do something about it, you know? And so they come to the state and say, oh, the Japanese are all worried about this. How did the Japanese find out? We didn't find out about it until the state wanted the spray. So how did, before we even found out about it, do the Japanese find out about it and get worried about it?
Well, I'm not saying even that's the case there. I'm saying
I understand, but that's, you know, I've heard this contention before that it's our trading partners.
Well, no, I think you may misunderstand the argument that, as I understood it, and I don't have it in front of me, I'm looking for it while we've been talking. I can't find it online.
No,
yet.
But that's what I've heard, is that it's our trading partners, primarily the Japanese, because the Japanese are the largest consumer of California fruits and vegetables, that they are concerned about bringing our fruits and vegetables onto their shores in case that moth is inside those containers.
That may well be the case, but this wasn't the argument that I heard was the rationale for doing this spraying. The rationale that I heard was that the Department of Agriculture is requiring foreign countries to do a lot of very serious spraying on its own, and therefore we have to apply the same standard to ourselves, or else we'll suffer some kind of trade penalties from those other countries. It's not that they're concerned about the fruit that's coming out of our country. It's more that we laid these restrictions on those countries in the past, and hence, as a bureaucratic measure, we have to do the same internally. I don't know if that's true. That's the claim that I've read.
Well, no, but what is true is that because Bill Clinton, when Ronald Reagan couldn't do it and George Bush Sr. couldn't do it, when Bill Clinton joined the WTO, that made things like that happen, where if we put some trade restrictions on other people, then that same restriction had to apply to us.
Right. Well, I think that's the allegation made by some analysts of this issue, that it really has to do with internal politics, you know, in terms of how you deal with foreign trade partners, not about real health issues. And it's
like I said, there is no emergency. This emergency was made up by this company because they want to sell their product. So they came to the state and said, there's a problem brewing in your state, and we have the way to get rid of it. So they sold the California Department of Agriculture a bill of goods, and now we have to suffer, and we have to be the guinea pigs for this company because they haven't tested their product on humans.
Quite possibly. Again, it's hard to you know, it certainly sounds plausible, but where's the, you know, what's the actual evidence that this is true in this particular case? You know, I don't.
Okay, well, where's the evidence that there's an emergency? There is none. There is zero evidence.
Hey, you just don't trust our Department of Agriculture. That's your problem, Scott.
But I was here during the MedFly thing, and they actually showed farmers on TV whose crop, you know, whose vegetable, I mean, fruit crops were being eaten by the MedFly. Okay. We have no such proof in this case.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. Is this something, what do you think of this, the idea that the city should open up public buildings for homeless people during these spray times? Is that an unreasonable request, a good idea? What's your thought about that?
Well, I think they should do something. I mean, at the very least, they should open the armory up for it, you know. I mean, the armory is due to open up when? In like 3 more weeks or something?
On the 15th, I think.
On the 15th of this month?
Right.
So why not open it a week early? You know, I mean, that's how many people fit in there? 400 or something?
100.
Oh, only 100. Well, okay. Well, that's at least 100 people if they chose to could get out of the spray. I mean, that's the very least they could do is open the armory tomorrow. You know, or tonight, for that matter. But, you know, as far as anything else, they could, you know, request that, as you say, a parking garage. But the problem with the parking garage is they're not sealed buildings. So if you're in there, except if you're parked in your car in there, but if you're just laying on the ground in the parking garage, that stuff can still drift in there, you know?
Yeah, I know. I mean,
so, I mean, basically, what you're realistically looking at is to find large buildings that they could actually be in, which would be like gymnasiums at the school.
Well, or like the Sentinel. The Sentinel building is now vacant.
Yeah, the Sentinel building. Okay, the problem is that everyone's going to say, oh, no, there's a bunch of bums, and they're going to spread feces on the wall.
Right. Now that, well,
you know, and so Ryan Coonerty may actually go into the Sentinel. If they open the Sentinel and let all the homeless people in there, Ryan Coonerty may actually go into the Sentinel building then and spread feces on the wall to prove that point, you know?
Well, now that's a pretty shitty thing to say about our vice mayor. Speaking of which, let's switch to that issue, because I know that some of us would be concerned about his positions on the sleeping ban and his votes on these, you know, making it illegal to walk into a parking lot and all that stuff, the latest repressive laws he's backed. He's sort of the number one prospect for being mayor starting in November, starting this month, right?
Yeah, at the end of the month.
Now, what do you think about that? Is there a chance we may do a coup and get our second choice, Cynthia Matthews, or, God help us, Lynn Robinson? What do you
think? What about Ed Porter? He hasn't served as mayor, and his time is almost up.
Ed Hall Monitor Porter? I guess that's a possibility. Maybe you could step in as a possible dark horse candidate.
Yeah, or the irrepressible Robert Norris.
Well, I would have to be given a suitable compensation. Anyway, well, I know that you also have been following, Scott, issues around the Santa Cruz Neighbors or the Downtown Neighbors, kind of the group that Lynn Robinson used to ride to power at the city council. What do you see happening? I mean, there's an election next year for city council. Are we going to have more Lynn Robinson clones?
The woman that's running the group right now, her name escapes me at the moment. I've heard rumors that she's running.
What's her name?
Her name escapes me at the moment.
I got you.
I mean, if you look at some of those emails she sends around, if you have any available to you right now, you could probably look up her name. But, you know, I've heard rumors that she's going to run.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also one of the guys that's like a major player in that group, Mike Bepke. I've heard rumors that he may also be running.
Oh, yeah. It's,
So we might have two members of that group trying to run to get on to, you know, like then back Lynn's play.
Yeah, well, she's already got the, you know, Coonerty, Matthews, and frankly, well, most of the rest of the council behind them anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, this council, I mean, for all the hysteria in this town amongst people that, oh, no, we're being run by a bunch of communist pinkos, you know, this town is run by the most conservative friggin' assholes I've ever seen anywhere, you know? You can get, I mean, Richard Nixon was more liberal than most of these people we have on the city council.
Well, Times have changed. We've entered, we're in the middle of a terrorist crisis, as you may know.
Yeah. Terrorism from within.
Well, Scott, thank you for your usual enlightening broadsides, and I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't interrupt me again, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, bye.
Phone lines are open, and I'm ready to be interrupted. 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, also known as freakradio.org. I've got a couple of articles that kind of caught my interest, and I think I'm going to roll them at you while I wait for incoming phone calls, if anybody wants to call in and comment on any of these issues. What do we got here? Well, let's just see here. Well, there's a claim that chronic homelessness has been dropping in an AP story, but well, that'll have to wait until we hear from the public. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio. What's your name?
This is John Joking.
Hey, John. What's up?
I just wanted to add one little thing about the live brown apple moth thing.
Okay.
I was doing a little Googling of trying to find out more information on it, and I came across this article by the, I guess it was the California Department of Agriculture. I posted it on eBay on one of those articles about the live brown apple moth controversy. Basically what they said was that the pheromone concept for controlling mating of the light brown apple moth has not even been tested, even in Australia. It's totally unproven. They said maybe it'll be developed someday for California. It's literally what it says in the report.
And what's the report again?
Well, I don't remember the exact title of it, but I posted a link to it on IndieBay under one of the articles on the light brown apple moth in the comment section there.
Well, let's look at it this way. Maybe homeless people can apply to the appropriate company that's selling this stuff as guinea pigs, you know, to get some kind of compensation for their good work in testing out this pheromone.
Yeah, really. But my point is that not only is it not an emergency, but they haven't even tested the solution to the emergency. They're allegedly going to cure the problem by spraying pheromone, but they haven't even proven that that's going to work at that point.
Well, it's a good opportunity to find out, don't you? I mean, let's give it a try. As Emily Riley said when asked, why should we make it illegal to walk into parking lots when there's no evidence that there's any additional crime problems there? Let's give it a try, shall we?
Yeah.
That's kind of the apparently the very positive attitude of these kinds of folks. Any word on whether they're going to be spraying tonight? Any news on that?
Well, I also posted on the Santa Cruz Sentinel website the link to sign up for the email alert. You enter your zip code and your email address, and they'll send you an alert when they're going to start spraying.
I mean, the upside is if you follow the Sentinel, the claim, I guess, maybe I got it from you, is that they're going to be, their window for spraying is November 4th through November 9th, and, of course, that's coming up tomorrow.
But basically what happened was I talked to the hotline today to try to confirm, because somebody posted a blurb on there on the Sentinel website right after I posted mine and said, tried to say that, they sprayed Scotts Valley and we're all dying over here and stuff. I'm not sure whether that's really a real person posting that, because I called the state hotline and they said they didn't do any spraying on Tuesday and Wednesday. So.
It said what? Wait a minute. I can't hear you. They said what?
They said there has been no spraying on Tuesday and Wednesday because of the weather.
Well, I know. There's been no spraying yet in the Santa Cruz County area, as I understand it.
Yeah.
So what I do understand, though, is according to the Sentinel story, that by the 9th, if they don't spray, they lose their window. I don't know if that's true, but that was a claim that was made. So I don't know if that's the case.
It was my understanding also that they were going to spray every day for that period of time. It's my understanding.
I can't hear you, John. They're not going to spray what?
I thought they were going to spray the whole day. I mean, every day for that window from the 4th to the 9th.
Right. Well, I don't know. But as far as I know, there's been no spraying yet, and we're running up against it. Today is the 8th. Tomorrow is the 9th. So who knows? Maybe it will be put off. And, of course, there's a court hearing coming up in federal court. Judge Ware is going to be examining the evidence. And as I said before, I think those who are challenging this are challenging the wrong part of it. They should be challenging the claim that there is an emergency infestation, not the claim that this this chemical is a toxic emergency because it might be damaging. I mean, that's much harder to prove. What you wanted to show is that there's no infestation emergency, hence they should use normal processes in going to the require environmental impact reports. But again, I'm not really that knowledgeable on the issue, and frankly, since we spent an hour on this already, I want to move on to something else.
Anyway, I think your point's well taken. Just one more thing is if they do spray, I think even Tony pointed out the fact that poor people generally don't see doctors very regularly. So it's kind of pointless to require, in order to prove that there was a, in order to prove a claim against the state, you got to go see a doctor and get a doctor's note to send in to justify the fact that you were, you know, to claim that
right,
you were
right.
sick from this stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, basically what we need to do is we need to have some kind of a free clinic like what they do at Western Service Workers. I'm thinking about going over there tonight just to try to get a feel for what their intake process is for how they set that up. Because basically all I need to do is just make a bunch of cold calls to doctors and see if they'll volunteer for a day and then get the intake process down so that the doctors will agree to do it.
Right, that sounds like an interesting approach. And also, if you could find out whether the Western Service Workers is actually making some public statements about this spraying and asking the public buildings be opened or something, you know, in the event that the spraying goes on. If they oppose the spraying, I don't know what their position is. They're kind of, as usual, you know, kind of a clandestine little group off to the side. I don't know. They're a group in Santa Cruz, the Western Service Workers Association, which you've worked with for a while, I guess, eh, John?
Yeah, back in when they did the Measure N, I was trying to have them scratch my back while I scratched theirs and go over there and help them out while they helped me out. You know, basically doing that kind of issue with them for a while.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your updates. Give me some more when you can, and we'll talk again. Thanks. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm, of course, been looking at the recent Iraqi war nonsense and the Democrats' collusion, whether it be with, you know, Mukasey, the new waterboarding isn't necessarily torture attorney general, or $50 billion for the Iraqi war cut down from $200 billion. We'll be talking about that in a minute. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi. I know you've talked enough about the moth, but you did ask whether they were spraying, and I went to the LBAM spray info, which is the one you get off Indy Bay, and it says, take cover. They are spraying tonight.
Okay, well, looks like get an umbrella, wrap yourself up, or, you know, grin and bear it, as the case may be.
Yeah, you know, I went by that table that Sunday that you were interviewing Tony. It seems like the people passing out the flyers were this group. It's the flyer that I got was IBAM spray, whatever it is, LBAM, it's an L. And that's... I'm calling it LBAM. I don't know who else is calling it that. It looks like they might have asked Tony to join them. But this one was, this flyer mentions the homeless, and it says they should seek shelter out of the spray, i.e. parking garages, under bridges, etc. Well, of course, both of those things are against the law. So I don't know, their brains are totally out there in the sky, obviously. They don't know what they're thinking about because they don't even know the law in their own city. So anyway, that's what I know about it, and I think that, I don't know why you waste your time bugging Tony, because he's a waste of time, and so is all the other city council members. Fuck him.
Hey, thank you, caller. A vicious attack on our city council. That's the kind of cranky people who call the show. Actually, I think she's probably right. She is right. I mean, it's still important to hold them accountable, which, of course, doesn't just have to take an hour's worth on the radio. I tend to give them far too much time. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Who's calling in?
Robert, Skidmark Bob.
Hey there, Skidmark. What's the good word?
Well, let's see. I have an on-scene report of the sky right now. It is still cloudy. Fog has been over the town a lot, but it is kind of clearing up as well. So who knows if they are going to spray. I watched the news earlier, our favorite KSBW. And they said that they want to spray, and the first place they are going to spray is Santa Cruz, if they do. So I see the skies kind of clearing up a bit, but I hear there's rain in the forecast for later. So they had that. They also had the coverage from the protest yesterday up at campus.
Oh, the long-range development project, the tree sit?
Yeah, I don't know if you've talked about that. I haven't been listening.
I have not talked about it. Of course, there's been nothing but on IndieBay.org and a lot of interesting coverage there. Do you have any updates? I know you've often been a cop watcher in the past. You've been up on campus or seen...
No, I haven't been there. I've been watching the coverage and then other things, too, like hearing other things from other people. And several people arrested because I believe they tried to move the barricades and the cops got all excited and started beating people and pepper spraying people. And people were arrested, and that's really fucked up. But, you know, I don't know what, you know, spurred the whole thing. But that's what happened yesterday. Several people were arrested. The first person was arrested trying to climb a tree at like 5 or 4 or 3 in the morning or something. And they were charged for trespassing and then let go. And there's still people up in the trees there. So they kind of need people's support about the expansion here in Santa Cruz. And also, the Bay Bridge, there's an oil tanker hit the Bay Bridge.
Oh,
and,
really?
spilled oil all over the fucking bay. Yeah, you didn't hear about that?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
It's one of the pillars of the Bay Bridge. And all this oil is now in the Bay Area and all these wildlife. They had a big thing on the news about that as well. All this wildlife is in the oil, and they're calling people out to try to rescue the wildlife there. As well as, you know, the bay. It's got all this oil in it.
Well, perhaps Uncle Dennis on his Earth First update may have something about that.
Maybe he will. I know this is too green for you, Robert.
No, I've got no... I mean, the oil is certainly not green. Let's be candid here. But, you know, I don't wish to intrude on the territory of other broadcasters who are more knowledgeable than myself.
Yeah, well, we expect to see probably more of things like this in the future as long as global warming continues and, you know... shortages of oil. They're talking about gas going up again. Right after that whole thing with the oil in the bay, it was so funny. It's like without a hitch, they went into this whole, well, you're paying more for gas. It's kind of funny, and people don't read between the lines and see it. But I thought I'd throw that out there if you want to talk any about that stuff. And I know in the end, it all affects homeless people and people that are poor, like myself, you know, a paycheck away from being on the street, you know, or half a paycheck, I should say. Because you can't survive in this town. I mean, the wages, you don't get paid enough, and everything costs. Rent is just sky high in this town to be able to stay in this town and keep it Santa Cruz weird. Can't do that, you know. You have to be rich to live here, and it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if I should advise people to, I would advise people to go into abandoned buildings and to, you know, take cover where you can if you have a genuine concern about the spraying tonight and you have no place to go.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sentinel building is, open.
There it is.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's not being used right now. It's a pretty huge building. I mean, I don't know if it's actually, if a door is open, but, you know, and you might say, well, you're urging people to engage in illegal behavior. Well, I think that there's a thing called the necessity defense that says if people have no other choice and they're likely to be, you know, damaged, then, you know, they have the right to commit lesser crimes in order to avoid greater evils. And frankly, going into an abandoned building, as Robert Flory and even I think Skidmark Bob was involved with in a rent strike at Campbell Street, or should we say... I'm not quite sure what you'd call that, fighting unjust eviction in 1996. There are direct action ways of trying to stave off what I call the right-wing riptide that is, pulling everybody out to sea.
Yeah, but, all that combined with what's going on in the earth today, you know, it's just going to get worse, and people need to, like, figure that out and, get together and try to... work these issues out, because it's going to happen. You know, a lot of shit's going to happen. Santa Cruz could be underwater soon. You know, who knows?
Hmm.
You know, what are we going to do then?
That way we'll be washed clean of the light brown apple moth checkmate. So
we'll get on top of the county building. They'll let us up there, right?
There you go. Glub, glub. Thanks there, Bob.
All right, Robert. Take care.
All right. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'll try to avoid these hysterical, frivolous calls from insiders that I'm much too tolerant of. Phone line number again is 427-3772. Here's an interesting story, which, it's It caught my attention. It's by a guy called Paul Craig Roberts, who writes on the website antiwar.org. He is a guy who was the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration. He's no flaming radical. He was associate editor of the Wall Street Journal editorial page and contributing editor of Bill Buckley's right-wing National Review, and he's co-author of The Tyranny of Good Intentions. He writes this story, which I found of interest. I'm going to read a little bit of it. It's called Supermodel Spurns the Dollar. Dollars Fall Collapses the American Empire. Bring those 737 overseas military bases home. The U.S. dollar is still officially the world's reserve currency, but it cannot purchase the services of Brazilian supermodel Gisele Bündchen. Never heard of her before, but supermodels and all that. Gisele required the $30 million she earned during the first half of this year to be paid in euros. Gisele is not alone in her forecast of the dollar's fate. The First Post, a newspaper in England, reports that Jim Rogers, a former partner of billionaire George Soros, is selling his home and all possessions in order to convert all his wealth into Chinese yen. Meanwhile, American economists continue to preach that offshoring is good for the U.S. economy and that Bush's war spending is keeping the economy going. The practitioners of supply and demand have yet to figure out that the dollar's supply is sinking the dollar's price and along with it American power. The macho super patriots who support the Bush regime still haven't caught on that U.S. superpower status rests on the dollar being the reserve currency, not on a military unable to occupy Baghdad. If the dollar were not the world currency, the U.S. would have to earn enough foreign currencies to pay for its 737 overseas military bases, an impossibility considering America's $800 billion trade deficit. When the dollar ceases to be the reserve currency, foreigners will cease to finance the U.S. trade and budget deficits, and the American empire, along with its wars, will disappear overnight. Perhaps Bush will be able to get a World Bank loan, or maybe one from the Chavez Bank, to bring the troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. Foreign leaders, observing that offshoring and war are accelerating America's relative economic decline, no longer treat the U.S. with the deference to which Washington is accustomed. Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, recently refused Washington's demand to renew the lease on the Manta Air Base in Ecuador. He told Washington that the U.S. could have a base in Ecuador if Ecuador could have a military base in the U.S. When Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez addressed the U.N., he crossed himself as he stood at the podium. Referring to President Bush, Chavez said, "Yesterday the devil came here, and it smells of sulfur still today." Bush, said Chavez, was standing right here talking as if he owned the world. In his State of the Nation message last year, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that Bush's blathering about democracy was nothing but a cloak for the pursuit of America's self-interest at the expense of other peoples. We are aware of what is going on in the world. Comrade Wolf knows whom to eat, and he eats without listening, and he's clearly not going to listen to anyone. In May 2007, Putin criticized the neocon regime in Washington for disrespect for human life and claims to global exclusiveness, just as it was in the time of the Third Reich. Even America's British allies regard President Bush as a threat to world peace and the second most dangerous man alive. Bush is edged out in the polls by Osama bin Laden, but is regarded as more dangerous than Iran's demonized president and North Korea's Kim Jong-il. President Bush has achieved his dismal world standing despite spending $1.6 billion of hard-pressed Americans' tax money on public relations between 2003 and 2006. Clearly, America's leader and America's currency are poorly regarded. Is there a solution? Perhaps the answer lies in those 737 overseas military bases. If those bases were brought home and shared among the 50 states, each state would gain 15 new military bases. Imagine what this would mean. The end of the housing slump, a reduction in the trade deficit, and the end of the war on terror. Who would dare attack a country with 15 new military bases in every state, in addition to the existing ones? Wherever a terrorist turned, he would find himself surrounded by soldiers. All the dollars currently spent abroad to support 737 overseas bases would be spent at home. Income for foreigners would become income for Americans, and the trade deficit would shrink. The impact of the 737 military base payrolls on the U.S. economy would end the housing crisis and bring back 140,000 highly paid financial service jobs, the loss of which this year has cost the U.S. $42 billion in consumer income. Foreclosures and bankruptcies would plummet. If this isn't enough to turn the dollar around, President Bush's pledge not to appoint an attorney general, if Michael Mukasey is not confirmed, offers more promise. If the Democrats will defeat Mukasey's nomination, which isn't happening, there are other superfluous cabinet departments that can be closed down, in addition to the U.S. Department of Torture and Indefinite Detention. The American empire is being unwound on the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. The year is 2 months from being over, but already in 2007, despite the touted surge, deaths of U.S. soldiers are the highest of any year in the war. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
So, Robert, it's Madison.
Hey, Madison.
Hi, I just, I'm listening to this gentleman's lame thesis. I guess he's of the blow up the Arab club from the Reagan administration last time.
I'm sorry, well, wait a minute, hold it. What are you talking about?
The man you're reading.
Oh, Rogers, the former Secretary of the Treasury, Assistant Secretary in the Reagan administration, talking about let's bring our military bases home so we don't spend so much money abroad.
Well, he's an idiot because I'm blowing the fuck out of his thesis. Are you listening, everyone? The thesis is done. It is not a winnable argument because what happens after they make all the bombs and they sit there, it's something that was a proven thesis out of Berkeley and UC Santa Cruz back in the late 70s, that the stuff stockpiles, creates inflation, and you have a poor economy.
Well, Madison, I think you're missing his point. He's really attacking the military establishment.
And for one frickin' time.
Madison, take a breather. Anyway, thank you for the call. Yeah, no, his thesis is not to expand the military, and actually it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. He's suggesting all those military bases should be brought back to the United States. And that way we wouldn't have to, it would all go into the U.S. economy instead of being spent abroad, which is, the reason you have 737 military bases is to control the world. So nobody's going to bring them home. That's not going to happen. But I found it kind of an interesting claim. Plus the interesting point that, a lot of folks are giving up on the dollar. And when the dollar really is given up on, then it, Maybe that in of itself will cause some significant collapse. The trouble is that the U.S. is a very well-armed nation and, has well-known weapons of mass destruction. In fact, it's the only nation that's ever used them. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, you made the point. The seven bases at home in every state will stockpile the military economy again, so it's not good for the country.
Uh-huh.
Get it? Get it? That was a huge thesis in the 70s. I can't believe you can't remember.
Well, okay. Thank you, Madison.
And I shifted a sale of the sculpture, $560,000, to euros 2 years ago in Holland.
Well, how come you never buy me
euros
dinner is my question.
Way ahead of the supermodel, super artist. I want euros, too. Who wouldn't?
All right, then.
Good economics.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think the point is that the military bases are needed for occupation of foreign countries. Military bases at home wouldn't mean anything. I mean, they're only useful for training and going overseas and, marching around, supporting coups and, making sure that people don't control their own oil resources and things of that sort. So that's the point. But anyway, maybe that didn't really get too clearly said in my reading of that article. We have another article. Let's hope this one works. Here is, what do we got here? This is interesting. It's called Using the Water Cure in the Philippines, Waterboarding in American History. Now, there is, for those of you who have been following Democracy Now! And the newspapers about the Attorney General appointee of President Bush, Mukasey, who for some reason Democrats Schumer and Feinstein voted for yesterday, I believe it was. So that guarantees probably Mukasey's appointment as Attorney General because he's such a great guy, other than the fact that he can't seem to recognize that waterboarding is torture under present law. This is an article by William Lawrence Katz. Some high U.S. officials claim not to be aware of it, and Judge Michael Mukasey, the president's choice for attorney general, prefers to equivocate. But waterboarding has long been a form of torture that causes excruciating pain and can lead to death. It forces water into prisoners' lungs, usually over and over again. Don't go away. I've lost my story, but I'm about to find it again. Oh, boy. Here we go. Almost. Don't go away. Here we are. It forces water into prisoners' lungs, usually over and over again. The Spanish Inquisition in the late 1400s used this torture to uncover and punish heretics, and then in the early 1500s, Spanish inquisitors carried overseas to root out heresy in the New World. It reappeared during the witch hysteria. Women accused of sorcery were dunked and held underwater to see if they were witches. In World War II, Japan and Germany routinely used waterboarding on prisoners. In Vietnam, U.S. forces held bound Viet Cong captives and, quote, sympathizers upside down in barrels of water. Waterboarding also has been associated with the Khmer Rouge. That's the Kampuchean or Cambodian tyrants. An extensive record of its use by the United States land forces exists in the records of the invasion and occupation of the Philippines that began in 1898. As the U.S. encountered resistance, armed resistance, by the Liberation Army of Filipino General Emilio Aguinaldo and sank into a 12-year quagmire on the archipelago, U.S. officers routinely resorted to what they called the water cure. Professor Stuart C. Miller's study of the Philippine War, Benevolent Assimilation, reveals this sordid story through congressional testimony, letters from soldiers, court-martial hearings, words of critics and defenders, and newspaper accounts. The pro-imperialist media of the day justified the water cure as necessary to gain information. The anti-imperialist media denounced its use by the U.S. or any other civilized nation. Fresh from their recent victories in the Indian Wars, the Philippine invasion of 1898 began with a big war whoop. U.S. forces landed in the Philippines in 1898, led by American officers such as Pershing, Lawton, Smith, Schaefer, Otis, Merritt, and Chaffee, who had fought treacherous Redskins, quote-unquote. At least one officer had taken part in the infamous 1891 massacre of 350 Lakota men, women, and children at Wounded Knee. A U.S. medic that had supported the Army's brutal Indian campaigns rhapsodized about this new opportunity for distant racial warfare. The influential San Francisco Argonaut spoke candidly, quote, "We do not want the Filipinos, we want the Philippines. The islands are enormously rich, but unfortunately they are infested with Filipinos. There are many millions of them, and it is to be feared their extinction will be slow." The paper's solution was to recommend several unusually cruel methods of torture it believed would impress the Malay mind. President William McKinley dispatched Admiral Dewey to the Philippines with a pledge to bestow civilization and Christianity on its people and promise eventual independence. Perhaps he was unaware that most Filipinos were Catholics. Perhaps he did not know that General Aguinaldo and his 40,000 troops were poised to remove Spain from the islands. Dewey supplied Aguinaldo with weapons and encouraged him, but that soon changed. From the White House and the U.S. High Command to field officers and lowly enlistees, the message became, these people are not civilized, and the United States had embarked on a glorious overseas adventure against savages. Quote unquote. Officers and enlisted men and the media were encouraged to see the conflict through a white superiority lens, much as they viewed their victories over Native Americans and African Americans. The Philippine occupation unfolded as at the high tide of American segregation, lynching, and a triumphant white supremacy ideology. U.S. officers ordered the massacres of entire villages and conducted a host of other shameful atrocities as the Philippine quagmire dragged on for more than a decade. "A white man seems to forget that he is human," wrote a white soldier from the Philippines. Atrocities abounded. To produce, quote, "a demoralized and obedient population," in Batangas, General Franklin Bell ordered the destruction of humans, crops, food stores, domestic animals, houses, and boats. He became known as the Butcher of Botanangas. General Jacob Smith, who had been wounded fighting at Wounded Knee, said his overseas campaigns were worse than fighting Indians. He promised to turn Samar province into a howling wilderness. Smith defined the enemy as anyone 10 years and up and issued these instructions to Marine Commander Tony Waller. I want no prisoners. I want you to kill and burn. The more you kill and burn, the better. It will please me. He became known as Howling Jake Smith. The water cure, quote-unquote, was probably first instituted when U.S. forces encountered local resistance. Professor Miller states that General Frederick Funston in 1901 may have used it to capture the Filipino general Emilio Aguinaldo. A New York World article described the water cure as forcing, quote, water with handfuls of salt thrown in to make it more efficacious down the throats of patients until their bodies become distended to the point of bursting. This may have been only one of the versions used. The water cure became front page news when William Howard Taft, appointed U.S. governor of the Philippines and later president of the U.S., testified under oath before Congress and let the cat out of the bag. The, quote, so-called water cure, he admitted, was used on some occasions to extract information. The Arena, an opposition paper, called his words, quote, a most humiliating admission that should strike horror in the mind of every American. Around the same time as Taft's admission, a soldier boasted in a letter made public that he had used the water cure on 160 people and only 26 had survived. The man was compelled by the War Department to retract his damaging confession. But then another officer stated that the water cure was being widely used when he reported, quote, the problem of the water cure is knowing how to apply it. Such statements leave unclear how often the form of torture was used for interrogation and how often it became a way to exhibit racial animosity or display contempt. During a triumphal U.S. speaking tour, General Frederick Funston, bearing a Congressional Medal of Honor and harboring political ambitions, bellicosely promoted total war. In Chicago, he boasted of sentencing 35 suspects to death without trial and enthusiastically endorsed torture and civilian massacres. He even publicly suggested that anti-war protesters be dragged out of their homes and lynched. Funston's words met far more applause than criticism. In San Francisco, he suggested the editor of a noted anti-imperialist paper, quote, ought to be strung up to the nearest lamppost, unquote. At a banquet in the city, he called Filipinos unruly savages and now claimed he had personally killed 50 prisoners without trial. Captain Edmund Boltwood, an officer under Funston, confirmed that the general had personally administered the water cure to captives and had told his troops to, quote, take no prisoners. President Theodore Roosevelt reprimanded Funston and ordered him to cease his inflammatory rhetoric. Facing a political challenge from General Nelson Miles, based in the Philippines, Teddy Roosevelt, who rode into the White House on his heroic exploits at San Juan Hill, did not intend to nourish more competition. The president privately assured a friend that the water cure, quote, was, quote, an old Filipino method of mild torture, and claimed when Americans administered it, quote, nobody was seriously damaged. But publicly, Teddy Roosevelt was silent about the water cure. In an article, The Water Cure from a Missionary Point of View, Reverend Honor Homer Stuntz justified the technique. It was not torture, he said, since the victim could stop it at any time by revealing what his interrogators wanted to know. Besides, he insisted, it would only apply to spies. The missionary also justified instances of torture by pointing out that U.S. soldiers, quote, in lonely and remote bamboo jungles faced stressful conditions. Mark Twain, a leading anti-imperialist voice, offered this view of the water cure. Quote, Funston's example has bred many imitators and many ghastly additions to our history. The torturing of Filipinos by the awful water cure, for instance, to make them confess what, truth or lies? How can one know which it is they are telling? For under unendurable pain, a man confesses anything that is required of him, true or false, and his evidence is worthless. Yet upon such evidence, American officers have actually, but you know about these atrocities which the War Office has been hiding a year or two. U.S. military trials for what are now known as war crimes resulted in convictions. Waller was acquitted because he followed the orders of Smith, and later retired with 2 stars. Howling Jake Smith was convicted, but he returned to a tumultuous citizen's welcome in San Francisco. When the convicted U.S. war criminals received only slaps on the wrist, U.S. prestige abroad sunk to new lows. A San Francisco park was named after General Funston. Teddy Roosevelt appointed General Bell of Batangas infamy as his chief of staff, and the president continued to wave the banner of aggressive imperialism. In 1903, he flagrantly seized a broad swath of Colombia's Isthmus of Panama so he could link up the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans under U.S. control. This boosted his popularity and splintered the anti-imperialist movement. Teddy Roosevelt also worked to undermine efforts to grant the Philippines independence, which finally took place after World War II. Teddy Roosevelt easily won a return to the White House in 1904, and in 1908, he chose Taft as his successor. By the time Taft left the White House in 1913, military resistance in the Philippines had ended, and so presumably had the water cure. Teddy Roosevelt had become a Mount Rushmore-sized American icon. The water cure was accepted as a necessary embarrassment in wartime. Appeals to muscular patriotism had exonerated the water cure and reduced a crime of torture to a misdemeanor. Is the U.S. headed the same way in 2007? And that was a story about the water cure by a guy called William Lawrence Katz, who's the author of Black Indians, A Hidden Heritage. His new revised edition of The Black West also includes information on the Philippine occupation and can be found in bookstores. This essay is based on his latest book, The Cruel Years, American Voices at the Dawn of the 20th Century, and even more heavily draws on Stuart Creighton Miller's Benevolent Assimilation. And that's, again, that's on the Counterpunch website, I believe. And just to show we're not a bunch of lefty ideologues here, here's a story. 46,000 returned to Iraq last month. This is by Lauren Freyer, AP writer, Baghdad. Declining violence has prompted Iraqi refugees to pack up and return home, with the government on Wednesday claiming 46,030 people crossed back over the borders in October alone. But the remnants of the brutality that has shaken Iraq keep turning up. The Iraqi army said 17 bodies were discovered in an area troops have only recently been able to enter after driving al-Qaeda fighters out of regions north and west of the capital. The mass grave was found amid brush near a school in Hashemayat, west of Bakuba, said Colonel Ishan al-Shamiri. Bakuba, 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, is the capital of the Diyala province, where al-Qaeda in Iraq is believed to have a strong presence. And I'm actually going to stop reading this AP story, which began by with the claim, which has to be considered, that there's the folks who support Bush's current surge policy claim that even though we have more casualties this year, the U.S. has more casualties than any other year, that the level of violence in various areas of Iraq has significantly dropped due to the presence of more U.S. troops. I want to explore this thesis. I'm not going to have a lot of time to do it today. And perhaps the best way to do it is to spend a little more time off-air researching this. I saw this article and I wanted to kind of pass it on sort of as a thought provoker. Here's a little bit more about the refugees. We're talking about homeless in the U.S. Iraqi homeless, I think it's what, 10 to 20% of the country is now displaced or homeless or refugee, which is huge. But here's more of this article. Syria is home to at least 1.2 million Iraqi refugees, and in a country of 20 or 30 million, which Iraq is, that's pretty huge. That's like, I don't know, 10 or 20 million American refugees. That's like the population of, I'm not sure if that's the population of California, but it's a huge number of people. Syria is at home to at least 1.2 million Iraqi refugees, and Jordan has about 750,000. Many of those Iraqis are living in limbo, unable to work, and running out of any money they're able to bring out of Iraq. Syria began demanding visas for the Iraqis last month, and Jordan has increasingly turned back Iraqis. Those who fled to the two neighboring countries before the new restrictions were put in place are now forced to leave when residency permits expire. So this would be one reason why 46,000 people are returning to Iraq. Unless they have been officially recognized by the United Nations as refugees, a process that can take months. That leaves many people with the choice of returning to Iraq or risking deportation. And with the improving security situation, this is the AP's view, it appears many Iraqis are opting to return home. Al-Masawi did not explain whether the 46,000 included people who arrived by air rather than by crossing borders from neighboring countries. According to the UN High Commission for Refugees, 2 million Iraqis have fled their country. Besides Syria and Jordan, Egypt has absorbed 100,000. About 54,000 Iraqis are in Iran, 40,000 in Lebanon, 10,000 in Turkey, and 200,000 in various Persian Gulf countries. The U.S. admitted that only 1,608 Iraqi refugees this year. Sweden has admitted more than 18,000 since 2006, the highest number in any European country, but now says it, too, is tightening asylum rules. On Monday, the Iraqi Red Crescent issued a report saying nearly 2.3 million Iraqis, the vast majority of them women and children, have fled their homes but remain inside the country's borders. The number of internally displaced people in Iraq grew by 16% in September from the previous month to 2,299,425, the Red Crescent said. This figure has skyrocketed since the beginning of 2007, when fewer than 500,000 people were listed as displaced. So it's gone from 500,000 last year to 2.2 million this year displaced inside Iraq, if I understand this story correctly. Al-Masawi questioned these figures in a news conference on Wednesday, publicly asking the Red Cross to give data, the Red Crescent, to give data to support the increase. The increase announced by the Red Crescent is not logical because we are now living in a stable security situation and many families have returned to their original places, Al-Masawi said. I think he's a government bureaucrat. He suggested some families have registered for Red Crescent aid because they were in financial straits. They had not been displaced. Scattered violence continued Wednesday, albeit at sharply reduced levels. Of course, the question is whether the Al-Masawi, whoever he may be, and I think if I look earlier in the story, I'll see exactly who he is, whether he has a specific interest in claiming that there is a more secure situation in Iraq. I mean, I admit to a bias here. He's a brigadier general. He's the Iraqi spokesman for a U.S.-Iraqi military push to pacify Baghdad. Doesn't mean he's not telling the truth, but it means his statement should be viewed with a consideration of what his role is. The Red Crescent, he disputes their figures that things have really gone up. On the other hand, Juan Cole, who writes about homelessness in Iraq, says 14% of the Iraqis displaced. 14% of Iraqis are now displaced from their homes. That would be the equivalent of 42 million Americans forced from their places of residence. I mean, it is a Stephen King-style futuristic apocalypse for Iraq, only it has just happened during the past 4.5 years, and the American government is responsible for kicking it off. Every time I hear in the U.S. media about how well Iraq is going now, I want to spit. Those Iranians that the U.S. military kidnapped from the compound of our ally, Abdul Aziz al-Hakim, and from the consulate. Hang on just a second here. My computer tends to skip back occasionally, and I have to catch up. From the consulate in Erbil, it turns out that they weren't espionage agents at all, or Quads Force operatives, or anything. The U.S. military is releasing them. The charges against them formed one of the bases for the Kyle Lieberman resolution in the Senate, and also for the recent designation by Bush of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps as a terrorist organization, even though it is a state organ. So will these two measures now be repealed? This, of course, has to do with the drumbeat for war in Iran, which I've been urging people in the community. I keep wanting to walk around with a sign, U.S., don't bomb Iran. and urging people to do something like camp out at the post office, because I keep getting the sneaking suspicion that unless there's massive protests around the country, the 52% who in the Zogby poll somehow favor invading Iran is going to tip the balance, and President Bush is going to bomb Iran. So there's that. We have a caller. You're on Free Radio.
Robert, I wanted to let you know that there are aircraft at a low altitude over Santa Cruz right now. So given that they plan to spray tonight, the clearances are such that aircraft are operating at the moment over Santa Cruz, I would urge Free Radio listeners to take whatever precautions they need to avoid being sprayed.
Oh, come on. This is a harmless thing. What are you talking about, Dennis?
We don't know that, Robert. I've studied the chemicals in there. Some of them are relatively benign. Others are a little bit more dangerous, but we don't know what the effects of this spray are. And if you don't have to be exposed to it, by all means, get out of the way.
Well, as long as you got a home, you're probably okay. Right, Dennis?
Well, go to a coffee shop, hang out at the library, do whatever you can to stay indoors.
That's good advice.
Don't expose yourself to the spray unnecessarily.
Good advice, Dennis. And of course, there are the parking garages, which I suppose aren't going to stop the spray from coming your way, right?
No, but if you stood in the center of the garage, it's probably the best place. There are businesses that are open 24 hours a day, Long's Drugs. You know, all you need to do is stay indoors probably for about an hour or so after the plane goes directly overhead, and the spray by that time has probably hit the ground. No guarantees, though. If the wind picks up, the stuff could keep blowing around all night.
Now, do you think people will be able to hear these planes and know what
the... You could see them, Robert. They have flashing red, green, and white lights.
So look to the skies, eh?
Look to the sky and run for cover.
Hey, thank you, Dennis.
Bye, Robert.
See you shortly. And Dennis, of course, is the broadcaster who will be doing the next show. He'll be playing gentle music while the planes spray, 60s music perhaps, and other music from the distant past with his show From the Cream to the Dregs, plus, an Earth First update as the tree sitters get sprayed. Hopefully they're covering themselves up on top of the trees up there at UCSC. A final and more relevant to our general topic here that I like to spend some time on, the question of civil rights for homeless people, something more specific to that. Here's an article from the Sacramento Bee. City orders homeless to abandon tent city. And I've actually sent this out to the Huff new email list. If you want to be on the Huff email list, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, just give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Residents of an informal tent city that has cropped up on a vacant field along North B Street in recent months are packing up their campsites this weekend, saying city and railroad police have threatened them with citation and loss of their belongings if they do not leave by early Monday morning. About 60 tents remained in the dusty Union Pacific lot Saturday morning. Homeless campers said some of their neighbors already had moved on in search of new sites. Advocates for the homeless and the homeless themselves say enforcement of the city's illegal camping ordinance is unfair in the face of an affordable housing shortage and inadequate shelters. All the shelters have wait lists, said 30-year-old Terry Jennings, who had come to the field with her husband a few days after being run off another spot. They're hurting more homeless than they're helping out here. Mark Marin, an attorney who filed a lawsuit in August challenging the city and county's illegal camping laws, said Sacramento should consider the example of the city of Los Angeles. In April 2006, the Ninth U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that citing people for illegal camping when the city was so short on shelter beds amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. Los Angeles currently has a moratorium on such citations. And that's the Jones decision, of course. Marin said he asked Union Pacific to allow the homeless to stay and to provide portable toilets. If there's no other place for our homeless guests to go, a tent city seems to be a temporary solution. And here's an example tonight with all this spraying when tents could be very important and very helpful to homeless people if they can't get into, you know, if Long's guards start kicking them out or if a Santa Cruz diner doesn't want them to hang out. There are not many restaurants that are open all night. There are a few overnight places, as Dennis has said. If there's no other place for our homeless guests to go, a tent city seems to be a temporary solution, said Sister Libby Fernandez, director of Loaves and Fishes, one of the three organizational plaintiffs named in the lawsuit. Matt Young, a Sacramento police spokesman, said he was unaware of the encampment, which is about a mile from the downtown courthouse. The city police department is dedicated to working with the homeless to the best of our abilities, he said, adding that private property owners are well within their rights in asking people to leave. Several homeless people said Saturday that city police officials, in an effort to help, had moved them to the field after they were forced to vacate another spot along the railroad tracks. Originally, they said they were just a dozen or so campers, but over the months, the numbers in the field have swelled. For the most part, said 41-year-old Will Williams, the site is self-regulating. If people want to vent anger by yelling or getting into fistfights, they may be allowed to do so, but if things get out of hand, others will intervene to calm things down. Everybody respects everybody else, he said, and I'm going to have to read the rest of this story at a future time. And again, you can go to a Google and you can check out the Sacramento Bee. So that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. As Dennis said, if you're outside, try to get inside undercover somewhere if you're concerned about this. And I'm going to stay here, I think, for the next hour and I'm going to barricade myself in the studio. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833 if you'd like. And if you have anything that you wish to report about this, if you've had any health consequences to this spraying, if it actually happens. And I'll be coming back to you on Sunday. You can check me out at 9:30 in the morning. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Tune in again.
Given to me through the PMA. and welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. That's me. I, of course, will be in the studio until 11 o'clock tonight, avoiding the light brown apple moth spray. For those of you who are outside, please take cover. Planes are in the air. Spraying starts now. So you've been warned. I don't know what's in that stuff. So anyway, take care and keep listening to Free Radio 101.1, www.freakradio.org. This is Blue Cheer.
You could live and shine inside of me. Yeah. I've got this a funny feeling, feeling in inside my head. Without you, I could live and die. Could I believe that I'd be dead? Lord, what would I be? Doctor, don't you turn me down. I want you to hear what I
You want some dirty deeds? Yeah. You want some dirty deeds, dog?